Question for you. Have you ever used the phrase, "you owe me one"? You ever said that to someone? "You owe me one." Now, what do we mean when we say that? Well, we kind of use it in a context, don't we? Where we're talking about, you know, I've done something for you, so you should do something back for me. Or at some stage, I'll ask you to do something for me. It's the kind of the philosophy of the world. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. You owe me one. Now, there's a danger this morning that actually we think that's how it works with Jesus. There are a lot of people that we meet, and actually, for some of us in the room, we all secretly operate like that. That it works that way with Jesus. You owe me one. You know, I scratch your back, Jesus. I'll do a few things for you, and then Jesus, you owe me one. You have to do something for me. Jesus, you know, I've worked really hard in the church for lots of years. I've served, I do the kids' stuff, you know, I make tea every week, you know, I put some money in the pot to make this building come together. Jesus, you know, you kind of owe me one. Now there's a danger, you see, that we start to operate like that. We have that kind of attitude. Or we find ourselves in a time of need, a time where we say, I actually need some help. And our phrase goes something like this. Maybe not in words, but in heart. We say, Jesus, I need your help. You owe me one, so help me. That's a real danger of how we do life. But in contrast today, Jesus holds up to us the opposite. He holds up to us this morning what Jesus calls great faith. He holds up to us this man in our story, this centurion, who he declares to the crowd is a man of great faith. A man that doesn't come saying, Jesus, you owe me one, but he comes saying, Jesus, you owe me nothing. I need your help, but you owe me nothing. So you have a look at verse 9, because here's where I think we get included in this story. Jesus is walking along. He has this encounter with this centurion or all the people he seems to send. And then Jesus turns. That's very deliberate. Now, just actually, if you just want an aside for Luke's gospel here, every time Jesus turns, something significant happens in Luke's gospel. Okay, he's teaching something. He's telling something. So Jesus turns to the crowd that are following and he declares to them, I tell you, I have not found such great faith, huge piles of faith, as I have in this man here. That's what he's talking about. That's what he's holding up to us this morning. Here is faith. Now, we've thought a little bit about faith already this term. So I think I used the illustration of a chair. That every one of you this morning are operating faith right now. Because you came in and you put all your weight on that chair. You trusted that chair to hold you up. That's faith. That's what it means to trust something. And this man in our story today, he comes to Jesus with great faith. And as we look at this story today, it's going to unpack for us what great faith looks like. What it means for you and I this morning to be people of great faith. As he turns to the crowd, it's as if he's turning to us as well and saying, let me show you what great faith looks like. Let me show you what it looks like to come to me like this man, not with a Jesus, you owe me one mentality, but with a Jesus, you owe me nothing, but I really need your help. That's what this story is going to do. And this morning, if you're here and you're not yet a follower of Jesus, then actually, can I tell you that as we look at this man, he will teach you what it means to come to Jesus with faith, what it means to become a follower of Jesus. Because here is everything that is needed. Everything that Jesus is looking for in a follower. Great faith. And if we have been Christians here a while, then actually this is kind of a check for us. Are we people of great faith? Or have we kind of slipped into this Jesus, you owe me one mentality? This is going to teach us this morning what it looks like to be people of great faith as he holds up this man to us. And so the first thing I want us to see this morning is this. Great faith says to Jesus, I heard you can help. Great faith says to Jesus, I heard you can help. Now, over the half term, I think I told you that my mum and dad and my brother-in-law and sister came up. Well, while my brother-in-law was up, I told him about the Krispy Kreme on the A10. I don't know if any of you have been up there ever. But when the light is on the A10, you get a free donut. That's, I think, the rule. That's my experience.
And I told him this good news. I announced it to my brother-in-law. But it was good news that he heard and then he reacted to. Because when we drove past, he says, "The light's on. We better go." He heard the good news and he responded by wanting to go to Krispy Kreme. Now, he'd not seen it. He'd never seen the experience or experience going into Krispy Kreme and getting a free donut. He'd not done that, but he'd heard it from me and it led him to action. That's what happened. You see, and when this man, it's the same for this man in this story, he acts on what he hears. Did you notice that? Look at how the story goes. He sends to Jesus for help. He must have heard the stories. Look at verse 3. That the centurion heard of Jesus. So he must have heard the stories. You know, maybe social media was going mad. Hashtag Jesus heals. Hashtag Jesus this. You know, perhaps people were kind of gathering this momentum for Jesus, thinking, wow, there's loads of stuff going on. And this man, this man's man, this centurion, you know, in charge of 100 soldiers, battle-hardened, hears about Jesus. He hears about him and he's got a situation going on because his valued servant is not very well. Now that shows something about the guy, doesn't it? That he values his servant. And he hears that Jesus is around. He hears that Jesus is the one who can help. And great faith says, "Do you know what? I need this guy. I need this guy's help. I heard Jesus can help." His great faith in Jesus comes simply from what he hears. Did you notice that? See, you may be sitting there thinking this morning, I've got nothing in common with a centurion. I've got nothing in common with this man who is tough, who is battle-hardened. You know, centurions, to become a centurion, you have to have done a number of battles. Who is in charge of 100 men. I've got nothing in common with this man. Do you know what you have? And what you have in common is this. I'm not sure that this man ever saw Jesus. If you read the story carefully, and this is what struck me this week, I think. I'm not sure that he ever gets to see Jesus. Because the story goes something like this. He hears of what Jesus has done, and then he sends some others to get Jesus' help, some elders. Then Jesus starts to journey to his house, and what does he do? He sends some friends out and says, "Don't come to my house. I'm not worthy to have you come to my house." And then the men go home and the servant's healed. I'm not sure he ever gets to see Jesus. And that makes him a lot like you and me, doesn't it, this morning? Because what is the case for us? We are people who have only heard the good news of Jesus. We did not see Jesus perform these miracles. We did not see Jesus die on a cross. We did not see him rise from the dead. But we have heard about it from people who did see it. We have heard the good news, and this story holds up to us the fact that faith, great faith, can come simply from hearing about Jesus. That's what this story is showing us this morning. Luke, we won't turn it, you just have to trust me, but we didn't start at the beginning of Luke's gospel. Do you know how he starts his account? How he starts his book? He says, "This is a carefully ordered, investigated account of the life of Jesus. He went to people after people who heard and who saw what Jesus did, and he gathered it down so that you and I could hear about Jesus and respond in faith. Say, Jesus, I heard you can help." Isn't that how we became followers of Jesus, if you are this morning? Isn't that how it happened that you heard of Jesus? You heard of this man who came into our world, was the Son of God, died on a cross to forgive us, rose from the dead to give us hope of new life? Isn't that what made you act in faith to trust him? Faith comes from hearing, Paul tells us in Romans. As the gospel is preached, it comes from what you hear. And actually, do you know what? As people who carry on being Christians, where does our faith come from? Where does this growing sense of being able to sit down on Jesus, as it were, in faith, in the chair, sitting down on the one we trust, where does it come from? It comes from what we hear. What is it that will make you like this man who keeps going to Jesus for help? It is what you hear. It is what you hear of Jesus as we open the scriptures, as we come to church, as we hear about the things he's doing in the lives of others. It is that will drive us to great faith. It was that will make us people of great faith. And so how are you responding this morning to what you hear? When you hear of Jesus, the protector, the peace giver, the lover, the man who can help us, what do you do? How do you respond? Faith comes from hearing. Great faith says to Jesus, I heard you can help. That's what happens. We hear of him and we are driven to him by what we hear. But as the story progresses, actually great faith is more than going to Jesus and said, I heard you can help. Great faith goes to Jesus and says, you owe me nothing. Great faith goes to Jesus and says, you owe me nothing. Emma and I have been watching The Apprentice on TV. Anyone else watch that? Yeah, a few of you do. If you don't know what it is, it's this kind of weird, arrogant program on a Wednesday night where a whole group of people want to become this entrepreneur's business partner. And if you've ever seen this program, I mean, it is horrendous, actually, when you think about it. But if you ever watch this program, these contestants, there is not an inch, a millimetre, a drop of humility in this program whatsoever. Because the whole thing that they're going about doing is selling themselves to Lord Sugar. Lord Sugar, I deserve to be your business partner because, and they run out this big list of things they've done. I deserve it. I am worthy to be your business partner. It's all about selling themselves. And the whole show is just self-defense and I'm brilliant at this and I'm brilliant at that. And actually, do you know what? The centurion couldn't be more different. Couldn't be more different to the people on that TV program, could he? His faith, his saying to Jesus, Jesus, I trust you. It comes to him, but it comes with a real sense of Jesus, you owe me nothing. Jesus, I have done nothing to deserve your help. I am unworthy of your help. See, just look how the story goes. His servant is ill, verse 2. But then look what he does. You get hints of this humility all the way through. First of all, he sends the elders of the Jews. Now, maybe that wasn't the smartest of moves for him to do, but in his mind, it just reflects what's going on, doesn't it? For him, he's like, I'm not worthy to go to Jesus. And he says it himself later in verse 6, I did not consider myself worthy to come to you. So he sent a group of people who he perceived as worthy, who he thought kind of had the right to go to Jesus. But he keeps his distance because he says such a strong view that Jesus, you owe me nothing. So I'll send these guys. And then as Jesus comes closer to the house, look what he says, verse 6. He sends out a group of friends. And it says, he was not far from the house when the centurion sent friends to say to him, Lord, don't trouble yourself. Lord, please don't go to all this effort. Please don't come on and walk to my house. Don't go to all this trouble, for I do not deserve to have you come under my roof. That is why I did not even consider myself worthy to come to you. Do you get this? Here is a man, actually, who in society was considered very high, but he comes to Jesus very low. He says, Jesus, you owe me nothing. What's he saying? Well, actually, these words, deserve and worthy, you know, let me try and put it in some modern phrases to capture it. He says, Jesus, I don't meet the grade. I don't have the qualifications to come to you. I am unworthy. I'm not sufficient for you. I'm not worthy of you. This man does not come to Jesus seeking his help with a sense of, well, Jesus, you owe me one. You know, look at all these things I've done. You know, you owe me. That's why you should help my servant. No, he comes with a very small view of himself. Jesus, you owe me nothing. And as Jesus turns to the crowd, do you see this? So at the end of this instant, he's amazed and he turns to the crowd. He turns to us and he says, great faith, piles of faith, comes to Jesus with a real sense of, Jesus, you owe me nothing. Is that how we come to Jesus? It is this humility that Jesus wants to see in us. That's why he turns to the crowd and says, look at this man. Because it is this humility, this sense of, Jesus, you owe me nothing, that we should come with every time we come to Jesus. This morning, this is the humility that is needed to become a follower of Jesus. You cannot become a follower if you come with any sense of, Jesus, you owe me one. You cannot become a Christian, as we call it, because of anything you have done. You can't whip out a big CV and say, Jesus, well, I helped so-and-so and I did this and I gave some money to charity and I was really kind to so-and-so. It doesn't wash with Jesus. Actually, what we need to do when we want to become a follower of Jesus is come and say, Jesus, I heard you can help, but you owe me nothing. You see, we are unworthy sinners. We are people who have taken everything from God, but wanted nothing to do with him. We are people who have lived and treated God like he does not exist. We are unworthy. Jesus owes us nothing. But great faith comes to Jesus and says, I heard you can help. And Jesus, I am an unworthy sinner who desperately needs your help, who desperately needs your mercy to give what I don't deserve. And if that's how becoming a follower of Jesus starts, then can I tell you that's how it carries on? It carries on, friends, with a sense of coming to Jesus with a you owe me nothing. Yes, we've been made righteous by Jesus. Yes, we have been forgiven. Yes, we have been given eternal life. But then don't get too big for your boots and think, yeah, I've got a reason now to come to the Lord Jesus. I've got a reason for his help. You don't. None of us do. We come to Jesus unworthy, saying, Jesus, you owe me nothing. That is how great faith expresses itself. Jesus, you owe me nothing. Do you have that sense of humility when it comes to approaching Jesus in faith? See, my guess is that many of us have started to operate like the elders did in this story. Did you notice that verse 4 and 5? There's a real contrast here. Have a look at verse 4 and 5. So the centurion sends the elders to Jesus. And what do they say when they come? Look at verse 4. When they came to Jesus, they pleaded earnestly with him. And look at their phrase. This man deserves to have you help him. Jesus, you owe this guy one. Why? Well, they say, because he loves our nation. And he built our synagogue. You see what they've started to argue? You see what they've started to reason? For a long time they've known God. And now they've slipped into this mentality of saying, Jesus, this man deserves your help because of what he's done. And actually, can I give you a warning that there's a real danger that we become like that too? What two things does he pick on? Loving the nation. Here's a man who's really good to people. He's a really nice guy. He helps out. He probably feeds the poor. He probably does a few things here and there. You know, he not just loves that, but he loves this particular nation. And he's been very kind to them, a nation they've conquered, and yet he's shown kind of unusual kindness. Jesus, this is a good guy. Have you ever thought like that? Jesus, I've done some good stuff. You owe me one. And then what does he say? Well, they built the synagogue. Jesus, I've put a few pennies into the pot. You know, I've built a building. I've done a few things. This isn't him saying it, by the way. This is others saying it about him. But their heart is that, Jesus, this guy deserves your help. He's worthy of your help. Look at what he's done. They've come with this list. And the danger for us is that the inner negotiator comes out. When you need Jesus' help, when life is tough, when things aren't going very well, when there's someone you love is sick, the danger is that the inner negotiator comes out. And we start saying, Jesus, my friend is sick, or I really need this, or I really want this person to be saved. And we start to negotiate with Jesus. Jesus, you know, I've done all these things. Please, Jesus, please help me. Beware, friends, of the you owe me one type of faith. Beware of it. You see, faith comes to Jesus, but how does it come to Jesus? Does it come to him and say, you owe me one? Or does it come to him and say, Jesus, you owe me nothing? So what type of faith do you have this morning? Do you have haughty faith? I know that's a big word, but I was looking for an H. A haughty faith is kind of proud faith. Or do you have humble faith? Faith that comes and says, you owe me nothing. So great faith, first of all, says to Jesus, I heard you can help. Great faith says to Jesus, you owe me nothing. And then as the story goes on, what we discover is this. Great faith says to Jesus, what you say happens. It has such a big view of Jesus. Did you think about this? Why did this centurion, probably a man with lots of resources at his fingertips, why did he send to Jesus when his servant was about to die? Why did he go for that course of action? Yes, it was because of what he heard. But actually, it's because he had faith, total trust, that Jesus could fix this problem. That's what it was. He had such a big view of the power and authority of Jesus that he thought there's no other place to go. Just look at the end of verse 7 with me, will you? Just the very last bit there. It says, he's asked for Jesus' help, but he says, but say the word. This is how big his view of Jesus is. But Jesus, if you say the word, and my servant will be healed. That's how big. He recognizes that Jesus does not even have to be in the room. He recognizes that Jesus only has to say a word, and then this man will be healed. Do you see how big his view of Jesus is? Do you see how much he perceives the power and authority that Jesus has? You see, even in verse 8, look at verse 8. This is what he understands about Jesus. Stuff, Jesus speaks and stuff happens. But then he compares Jesus to himself in some way. Look at what he says, verse 8. He says, look, I get this, Jesus, because I am a man under authority. That's what he says. So this centurion has to take orders. And if he disobeys his boss, he's in big trouble. But he does what his boss says. But then he's also got men underneath him. So the centurion gives a word, and then men go and do it. You see that? I give an order. One, I say, come, and he comes, and go, and he goes. Do this, and he does this. The centurion understands power and authority very well. And as he tastes it in his own world, he recognizes that Jesus has the ultimate power and authority. If there's a pecking order of power and authority in our world, Jesus is right at the top. And what Jesus says happens. If Jesus gives the word, something happens. If Jesus says come, people come. If Jesus says go, people go. If Jesus says do this, people do this. If Jesus says be well, that man will be well. You see his view of Jesus? That's what great faith does. It has such a big view of the power and the authority of Jesus to fix his problem. And great faith, great trust in Jesus comes to him and says, what you say the word, and it happens. Now again, isn't that how you become a follower of Jesus? With this recognition that what Jesus says happens? Isn't that how you became a follower this morning? With a total trust that when Jesus says he can forgive your sins, that he really can do that. If not, then you're sitting here with a false kind of wavering hope on you. Our Lord Jesus says, he declares over those who put their trust in him, you are forgiven. You have been given eternal life. That is a total confidence in what he says, what he says happens. You know, we come confident that what he did on the cross worked. And again, isn't then this how we carry on as Christians? If this is how we become a Christian, totally confident that what he says happens, this then, isn't it, why we keep coming to Jesus? That he is the one who has power and authority to help. We're confident in his power, saying to Jesus, what you say happens. This centurion teaches us what great faith looks like in our everyday problems. See, this centurion had a need, didn't he? It wasn't actually his own body that was hurting. It wasn't his thing. It was just someone he loved. Someone he valued. But great faith drove him to the one that he believed had power to help him. And that's what he's holding up to us today as great faith. So what do you do in your everyday troubles? Where are you driven to? Where is your faith? Who are you relying upon? When the one we love is sick, when the one we value is not very well, when we need help with our work situation, when we've got something horrendous going on in our relationships, when those we long for around us, we want them to be saved, where do we go? Well, we must go to Jesus and say, Jesus, I heard you can help. You owe me nothing. And Jesus, what you say happens. You are the one with power and authority. Someone who has great faith approaches Jesus with that kind of confidence. Even from a distance. Do you get that? That's the thing. I have to confess, that's the thing that's most grabbed me about this man this week. I know it's not the main thing in the story. But all of this happens from a distance with this man. And isn't that true for us? See, sometimes you look at guys like this and you think, oh, well, I'd believe if I was in his situation. But you know, he didn't see him either. But from a distance, he had this great faith. And friends, we are at a distance from Jesus right now. A distance because he is in heaven and we are on earth. We have not seen him. But we can still be people of great faith, just like this man was. Just look at verse 10. This is how the story ends. It's a great ending. Then the men who had been sent returned to the house. And what do they find? The servants well. Was this centurion's faith, great faith in Jesus, misplaced? No chance. Is our faith in Jesus misplaced? No chance. Actually, Jesus is the one who forgives. Jesus is the one who rose from the dead. Jesus is the one who's coming again. Our faith in him from a distance is not misplaced faith. And this story is here to show you that's true. Great faith in Jesus is confident in his power and ability to help and to do the things that he says he will do. That's the important thing. His word has power. And if he says you're forgiven, you're forgiven. If he says he's coming, he's coming. And he's the one that we want to plead with for help, because his word makes stuff happen. And so where are you this morning? Are you doubting that power in some way? Are you doubting his ability to help? Are you thinking, well, I know I hear it every week that Jesus has power to help me out, but actually some of the other ways seem more effective. Is that where you're at the moment? Great faith says to Jesus, what you say happens. And so Jesus, look with me one more time. Verse 9. When Jesus heard this, when he saw this man, this centurion, he turned to the crowds and he said, I tell you the truth, I have not found such great faith in all Israel. He's commending to you and I this morning, not an attitude that comes to Jesus and says, Jesus, you owe me one. But one that comes with great faith that says, Jesus, I heard you can help. I keep hearing you can help. Every day I open my scriptures, it commends to me that you help. Jesus, you owe me nothing. I am an unworthy sinner. Jesus, whatever you say happens. That's what he's commending in us today. That is how someone becomes a follower of Jesus. And that is how you and I must live as people of faith. We're going to sing about that. Let's stand together. Sing a song by faith. We see the hand of God. It's a song that encourages us to faith, great faith, in what Jesus has done. Let's stand and sing. Ethan, are you happy to do the words from here? Thank you.